Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we are reading today Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 20, called Conversation Between Maitreya and Vidura. Verse number 24.
Tato hasan sabhagavan.
Asurai nirapatrapai.
Asurar nirapatrapai.
Anviyamanastarasa. Krudo bita parapatat.
Tato hasan sabhagavan.
Asurai nirapatrapai.
Anviyamanastarasa.
Krudo bita parapatat.
Tato hasan sabhagavan.
Asurai nirapatrapai.
Anviyamanastarasa.
Krudo bita parapatat.
Tato hasan sabhagavan.
Asurai nirapatrapai.
Anviyamanastarasa.
Tato hasan sabhagavan. Then Hasan, laughing. Sabhagavan, the worshipful Lord, Brahma. Asurai, by the demons. Nirapatrapai, shameless. Aviyamanaha, being followed. Tarasa, in great haste. Krudaha, angry. Bitaha, being afraid. Parapatat, ran away. Translation: the worshipful Lord Brahma first laughed at their stupidity, but finding the shameless Asura close upon him, he grew indignant and ran in great haste out of fear. So maybe I should give the context, because the context is quite special right now. So the verse before was, Lord Brahma then gave birth to the demon, to the demons, from his buttock, and they were very fond of sex. Because they were too lusty, they approached him for copulation. So right now, Lord Brahma had given birth to some demons who came out out of his buttock, and those demons are so much induced by lusty desire that they approach their own father for copulation. And now in that verse, it is said that Lord Brahma first laughed at their stupidity, but then ran away in great haste and out of fear from those demons. So here is a very short purport. Sexually inclined demons have no respect even for their father, and the best policy for a saintly father like Brahma is to leave such demoniac sons. So we will take the next verse to have a little more substance from to speak about. So verse 25. Sa upavraya varadam prapanarti haram harim anugrahaya bhaktanam anurupatmadashanam. Translation. He, Lord Brahma, approached the personality of Godhead, who bestows all boons and who dispels the agony of his devotee and those who take shelter of his lotus feet. He manifests his innumerable transcendental forms for the satisfaction of his devotee. Purport. Here the word bhaktanam anurupatma dashanam means that the personality of Godhead manifests his multiforms according to the desires of the devotees. For example, Hanumanji, Vishranjagaji, wanted to see the Lord, the form of the Lord, as the personality of Godhead Ramachandra, whereas other Vaishnava want to see the form of Radha and Krishna, and still other devotees want to see the Lord in the form of Lakshminarayan. The Mayavadi philosophers think that although all those forms are assumed by the Lord, just as the devotees desire to see him, actually he is impersonal. From Brahma Samhita, however, we can understand that this is not so, for the Lord has multiforms. It is said in Brahma Samhita Advaitam Achyutam, the Lord does not appear before the devotee because of the Lord's imagination. Because of the devotee's imagination. Brahma Samhita further explains that the Lord has innumerable forms. Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan. He exists in millions and millions of forms. There are 8,400,000 species of living beings. But the incarnation of the Supreme Lord are innumerable. In the Bhagavatam, it is stated that as the waves in the sea cannot be counted, but appear and disappear continually, the incarnation and form of the Lord are innumerable. A devotee is attached to a particular form, and it is that form which he worships. We have just described the first appearance of the boar within this universe. There are innumerable universes, and somewhere or other, the boar form is now existing. All the forms of the Lord are eternal. It is the devotee's inclination to worship a particular form, and he engaged in devotional service to that form. In a verse in Ramayana, Hanuman, the great devotee of Ram, said, I know that there are no difference between Sitaram and Lakshminarayan, forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but nevertheless, the form of Rama and Sita has absorbed my affection and love. Therefore, I want to see the Lord in the form of Rama and Sita. Similarly, the Gaudiya Vaishnava loves the form of Radha and Krishna, and Krishna and Rukmini in Dwarka. The words Bhaktanam Anurupatma Darshanam means that the Lord is always pleased to favor the devotee in the particular form in which the devotee wants to worship and render service to him. In this verse, it is stated that Brahma approached Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This form of the Lord is Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. Whenever there is a trouble and Brahma has to approach the Lord, he can approach Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. And it is the grace of the Lord that whenever Brahma approaches about disturbance in the universe, the Lord gives him relief in so many ways. Giving sign of dying. Some beep of empty battery. Okay, so let us pray to receive good inspiration for this morning lecture. Maum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaurapani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatyade Shatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasati Gauravakta Brinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here the second verse we read today, Lord Brahma was running away from those demons and came to Vishnu. Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, to ask for shelter. So, that's quite a hot topic today, especially the reason why Lord Brahma is going to take shelter of having those demons of lusty desire following him. And I felt to speak a little bit on that topic, although it's a topic one never feels so comfortable to speak about. But I think it's relevant for everyone, and it's very much connected to our spiritual life in practice. Because those demons of lusty desire, they are coming in the life of every devotee at some times, and are actually challenging the life of the devotees. And I think it's important to notice a little bit the way those demons come and the way one can deal with them. We know already that ultimately we will need to go and take shelter in the Lord, that the living entity will not have the strength to fight those demons. We know also how those demons of lusty desire, they are those who are rooting us in this material world. They are them who are rooting us in this material body, that's those strong push that put us, that attached us in this material aspect of life. We know also that in the four rules and regulations that we are following, this one is the most difficult for the devotees to keep. And we know also that many big sadhus, we have stories in Bhagavata of very advanced souls who suddenly fell from their spiritual standard because of those lusty desires coming. So how strong and how determined the jiva must be to face those lusty desires when they are coming. Actually, those demons can have their chance to overcome the jiva when the jiva is weak. When the jiva is full of spiritual consciousness, as in other words, as a good sadhana, a good association, those desires are not coming close to the jiva. But when the jiva is weak in his spiritual practice, or do not have association, or live far away from devotee, then those desires, those lusty desires, have chance to come and disturb the jiva. So it's very important that we, in our spiritual life, if we get some glimpse of those demons coming toward us, to understand I need to make my spiritual life strong. If they are coming closer, that means my spiritual life is weak. One devotee was saying all the weaknesses we encounter in our spiritual life, they are due to compromised japa, because we are not giving enough importance, enough focus into our practice of the chanting of the holy name. Therefore, we become weak. But if our japa practice is not compromised, if we are really giving ourselves into the practice, then we are bound to be spiritually strong, and then we are actually in safe ground toward those type of desires coming toward us. Also, when we see that those demons are around, they are coming closer, it's a sign. It's like almost like an alarm sign, like a red light beeping and blinking, saying, "Hey, wake up, wake up! You are not spiritually enough. You are undernourished spiritually. You are not getting enough spiritual food. You are actually weak." Sachinandana Swami speak about these stories of the two dogs which are in the heart of the living entity and are fighting. And then the question comes, who will win? And the answer is the one you give food. So when we get those alarm signs coming in our life, it's a sign that we are undernourished spiritually, and that we should actually pray to get taste, spiritual taste in our practice, so that we'll get life into our spiritual practice, so that this spiritual taste will remove everything. The material taste will go away immediately when we develop this spiritual taste. We know it's not so easy to develop it, and maybe in our spiritual practice or spiritual life, maybe in 10 years, we can count the times we were really ecstatic, the times we really had a deep spiritual impression. It's not so often that we are in ecstasy, that we are full of love. So those experiences, those spiritual experiences, they are there to help us, that they are there to uplift us, and we should pray also for having those experiences, those distaste in spiritual life. So when those demons come around, it's a test, it's an alarm point, it's an alarm sign that we need to pray for spiritual taste, because the soul is looking for that taste. And when we are challenged or tested by those demons, then our only chance is toward this higher taste, that we can get the escape. I remember some years ago we were traveling, and Sachinandana Swami was giving a lecture in Langenthal in Switzerland, and the topic was on sex desire, and someone asked a question at the end of the lecture, and the person said, "But so many psychologists or people in the world they say it's very bad to refrain or repulse sex desire, but one should actually let it express, otherwise you become mentally disturbed." So I ask Maharaj, what do you think about this type of arguments from modern psychology? And Maharaj gave a very nice answer. He said, "See, whatever emotions come to you, they will bring some physical results. Like, for example, if you become angry, your face will become red, and your lips will quiver, and you will act in such and such ways." So he said, in the same way, if you are thinking of Krishna, if you are thinking of your relationship with Krishna, one physical effect in the midst of many, many physical effects that will happen when one is really connected to Krishna. I mean, in that time he was connected to men. I don't know how it works really with women, but he said at that time the semen will come from the lower part up to the brain. When the person think of Krishna or his relationship, this is one of the bodily transformation. The semen just come in the brain and gives intelligence and give clarity of mind. So it's not a repression, but it's actually a transformation or a reorientation of this energy. So that I found it was also very nice answer. Also, when those desires come, I know that I can transform this energy because it's such a powerful energy is there. So I have the choice to transform that energy if I think of Krishna, if I think of my relationship with Krishna. And this will also bring us into this taking shelter of Krishna. So the second part of this lecture, I will call that the turning point. The turning point of honesty, or the turning point of sincerity. When those demons are coming close to us, what are we going to do? Are we going to face that? Or are we going to take it cheaply? For example, when we are under the veil of illusion, it's very difficult to see things clearly. And often when those lusty desires are around, the mode of illusion is also around, that we cannot discern properly. And often the living entity, when those desires increase, will think, yeah, actually it's not so bad. It's not like if I kill a brahmana or things like this. Or we'll try to find excuse. Yeah, anyway, I'm in that ashram or that ashram. It's okay for me. Or, but Prabhupada said, or, you know, I mean, there he will not, the mind will not find anything. But the mind, when we are weak or under illusion, we will try to find excuses. And the turning point is there of sincerity. How much do facing one's own sincerity or one's own honesty in life, how much do I really want Krishna? How much do I really want to go back to Godhead? How much do I really want to follow the vows that I have given to my spiritual master? So here is the turning point before taking shelter. Unless one do not understand, I don't want that. I don't want to follow those urges. I know they are not good for me. I know they are detrimental for me. This is the turning point. And if one come to that point, then one can go into taking shelter. But if one do not take that position of not accepting this demons or this desire coming, then without taking this point of taking decision, it's very difficult to overcome them. So here is the turning point of realizing that's not good for me. I don't want that, and I want to turn toward Krishna. In the beginning of my Krishna consciousness, I spent one week in Sridham Radhakund when I was in India. I was staying in the Gopal Mandir of Bhakti Swarup Damodar, and there was a very, very nice Vaishnava, Yamuna Jivan. Anyone of you knows Yamuna Jivan? He's a devotee from Quebec, and he took Braj Bas. He's staying in Braj since 20 years now, do not have passport or anything else. And yeah. And he's just deeply, deeply absorbed into chanting and worshipping, and really a special soul. And at that time he was staying in this temple as the cook. And just before I would go back to the West, I spoke to him and I asked him for some advice in my spiritual life. And I did not mention anything in particularly. And then he told me about those lusty desires. He said, when those lusty desires will come, the important is that you not let them grow. As soon as they enter your mind, you just throw them away. If you keep thinking of them, you are gone. as more as you allow the mind to think of them, as more difficult it becomes to control anything, and then you are just gone. And this is the teaching of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. As much as you put your attention on a material sense object, as more attraction for that object will come. So here it's also important in that turning point to understand as soon as they come, to not let them grow, to not let them take place and strength by thinking of them, but by immediately removing it and immediately taking shelter. So the third part of the lecture is this taking shelter, approaching the Lord for shelter. And here we will a little bit broaden the subject. We will not take it only the taking shelter in this particular situation of material, of lusty desires, but we will take it in general in our spiritual life. Hari Bol. So the basic rule to take shelter is to understand our inability, to understand we have no strength by our own. Although we might fight, we might try, the point of taking shelter is the point of understanding I cannot do it alone. I have to turn toward somebody who can really help me, someone who is more powerful than me. It can be a spiritual master, it can be Vaishnavas, but ultimately in that case, it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see how Brahma was running toward the Lord for taking shelter. I remember some years ago, I think it was Nishinga Chaturdashi, we were in Nishinga Kshetra farm, and Sachinandana Swami, actually also this year in the Sankirtan festival, this point came up of taking shelter of Lord Nishingadev in difficult moments. We know we are all, I think, quite expert in taking shelter in the Lord when our body is in danger, or when our mind is in big troubles. We immediately, Nishingadev, Nishingadev, like you are driving in a car and the situation is dangerous, Nishingadev, Nishingadev. But Maharaj explained that actually this danger for our body are not so often. It's not every day that one needs to take shelter for protection of the body. Usually everything goes quite well, just exceptional circumstances we might need to take shelter. But then Maharaj said, what about taking shelter from our six enemies? Who are actually all the time, or many, many, many times during the day, they will come to attack our Bhakti Lata, they will come to attack our plant of devotion. How many times anger, lust, envy are coming to us? If we calculate one day and we really make an endeavor of introspection, wow, those enemies are all the time there. So this taking shelter, it should very much include this taking shelter from those six enemies. When this is the main reason we should approach the Lord for shelter against those enemies, because those enemies are not directly touching our body, but they are touching, they are attacking our plant of bhakti, our bhakti lata, our devotional attitude in service. So there it's really a place where one can take shelter. Often also devotees think, how will I take shelter? Everything goes well for me. Why do I need to take shelter? Often we are in that illusion that everything is good enough. We don't actually need to take shelter. We don't actually need the Lord. Everything is fine. I do my sadhana. I have my association. I come to the temple on weekend. Everything looks all right. But this is due to lack of introspection. We are not aware of those demons inside who are giving us these troubles. When Nanda Maharaj went in Mathura, just after Krishna's birth, one messenger had come to Vrindavan and told, the messenger told Nanda Maharaj, please go back to Mathura. Vasudeva is so anxious to know about how is his son doing. And anyway, you need to pay your taxes to Kamsa. So just go to Braj now and give some news to Vasudev. So Nanda Maharaj went and spoke with Vasudev and exchanged and explained how was Krishna now and how was everything. And suddenly in this beautiful exchange between Nanda and Vasudev, Vasudev became silent. And then Vasudev became very grave and told Nanda Maharaj, go back immediately to Braj. Some danger might come, some problematic situation, some risks are there for Krishna. Go immediately to Braj. So Nanda Maharaj was surprised, this change of mood in the discussion, and greeted his friend and just went back to Vrindavan. And as he was walking back to Vrindavan, he was all the time thinking of Krishna. And what if Vasudev is right? What if something happened? And what did he do in that situation? He took shelter in the Supreme Personality of God. He had anxieties in his heart, but he was taking shelter in the Lord, who was actually his own son. But he was taking care, shelter in the Lord for solving his anxiety, solving the eventual problem that could come. And there in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that this is the attitude of the devotee. The devotees understand that at every step there is danger. And therefore, at every step, at every moment, the devotee needs to take shelter in any circumstance, whatever he's doing. In our services, we can take shelter of the Lord. Why? To be able to perform our services with quality, with details, with a pleasing attitude. At a certain time in my spiritual life, in my service to Satchinandana Swami, I came to a time I was all the time making mistakes. And Maharaj was all the time chastising me. And he was mainly doing it in front of everybody. So it was very painful, very painful. And I was feeling this pain and I was just trying to improve and trying to concentrate on what I'm doing. But still, I was all the time making mistakes. Until I came to that point, I need to take shelter. As long as I think I can do all the service by my own, I was just keeping on making big mistakes and being chastised. And when I came to that point, I need to take shelter in the Lord so that I will be able to do proper service. When I came to that point and started to pray to Krishna, okay, Krishna, now is the next program. Please allow me to do everything right. Please remind me if I forgot anything. Only when I started to take shelter, then the situation was solved. But as long as I was trying hard on my own to do it everything on the right way, it was not working. And that was a beautiful teaching I got in my life, that even for service, I should be taking shelter. Before our cooking service, before giving lectures, before whatever we do, we can take shelter at the Lord to receive this intelligence, to receive this attitude, this devotional attitude to perform our service. So that's another area in which one can take shelter. And that's taking shelter even though one do not feel there is a big need. It's not a threatening situation, but it's taking shelter at every step, taking shelter, thinking at every step we can make mistakes, we can have fall down. Every step there is a danger, so we can take shelter. There is a nice experience also we had in Venice. I don't know how we say in English. You know this city in Italy where they have the carnival? So we had a Harinam there, and that was for the carnival day, so everyone were with their masks, and it was a big procession. Mahavishnu Swami was there with his accordion. There was like 100, 200, 300 devotees, really a big crowd. But the weather became bad and bad and bad. And then we arrived in the Plaza San Marco or San Polo or something, the main place where there was a big stage and a lot of kami music coming very, very loud. And when we arrived in that place, the rain started to pour like torrents. So our Sankirtan group became weak and weak and weak. The kami music was super strong, the rain was there, everyone became mental, and Maharaj was leading the kirtan. I mean, later he told us what happened. Later he told us that when he saw the devotees in that situation, he just could not do anything but to take shelter. And he was chanting and he was praying to the Lord, please, please, do something, arrange something. What do we do now? How will that continue? And at that time, he said, suddenly in the kirtan, my glance was fixed into a specific place in that big area. And there was a place where there was some shadow. So immediately he took the group there, and because it was close to a wall or close to a house, the sound of the kirtan started to amplify, like it was not before when they were in the middle of the place. So suddenly all the kirtan group was protected from the water and the sound was becoming loud. And suddenly it was almost like a miracle. The devotees just became mad. Just became like totally in ecstasy and started to just embrace each other and dance in the arms of each other. And it was really like explosion of devotion. And people were just totally mesmerized, we will say. People were just like looking at the devotee. They were just like moved and touched by seeing what was happening in the devotees. And Maharaj was saying, Krishna saved us. I had to take shelter. And because the shelter was given with so much intensity and so much sincerity, just Krishna appeared and just gave solution, and just not only he gave the shelter, but he gave this love in the heart of the devotees. He was just manifesting himself. So here is also a beautiful point. So to get the shelter of the Lord, one need to involve totally his heart. One need to be with utmost sincerity and really, full heart back to the Lord. One cannot take shelter half-hearted. One cannot ask for shelter just like this, but not be totally there. It's something that needs to be activated in the heart so that it really works and the Lord appear. In order to take properly shelter in the Lord, we need also to forget our fake shelter, our false shelter. Very often we are taking shelter there, shelter into money, into beauty, into knowledge, into position. Often we will tend to take shelter in those material areas before we really take shelter in Krishna. So it's also a point to not lose one's time and go directly at Krishna's lotus feet. So I would like to end this lecture. I have two, but let's see. Let's start already with the first one. It's a very nice story of a king who was called Shivaji. And this king was... This king, of course, had his kingdom and was ruling there. He was a very pious king. He had a big temple in his kingdom, and every day he would go there, he would chant japa, he would praise the Lord, dance for the Lord. But at some times, there were some rulers, some Muslim kings that were invading India at that time, and I think he was ruling in South India at that time, and then the Muslim came closer, and war started in the area around his kingdom. And one day, as he was in the temple, the armies of the Muslim came right around his kingdom, entered the kingdom, and were actually all around the temple. They knew the king is inside, and they were all waiting to kill him. When the news came to Shivaji, he just folded his hand and just entered in deep prayer and deep mood of taking shelter. My dear Lord, Everything here belongs to you. I belong to you. You please arrange whatever you want. As the Muslims were thinking, should we enter, should we wait out, what should we do? Suddenly they saw Shivaji coming out of the temple, running away, jumping on his horse and going away. So all the Muslims started to follow the king, and the king went up the hill with his horse, and it seems that the horse was at times flying, and the army was following this king, and we will get him. And suddenly the horse of Shivaji turned back. All the Muslims stopped their horses, and I thought, what now? Will he dare to come in front and fight against all of us? He is alone. And that was the case. The horse who seemed to fly away with Shivaji on the horse started to fight and ended all the Muslims. I mean, could kill all of them. And then Shivaji came back to his kingdom alone with the horse, and everyone was screaming, Shivaji, Shivaji, Kijai, Kijai, and everyone was so happy. And then Shivaji entered the temple, everyone followed him. But when everyone entered the temple, they saw Shivaji deeply in his prayerful attitude, in his taking shelter, like he did not fight at all. And then they look at the deity. And the deity was in a warrior outfit on the altar. And it was the Lord who had appeared in the disguise of being Shivaji and had arranged everything. Shivaji did not know anything what happened. He just heard everyone coming in the temple, Shivaji ki jai, Shivaji. What's up? What's up now? What's happening? So I found it very innocent story, but very, very beautiful. How the Lord is taking over when his devotee is deeply taking shelter, how the Lord is taking over and helps his devotees. Taking shelter is so nice. Huh? When one is able to do that, one feels so much happiness. One feels the reciprocation of the Lord. As long as we don't take shelter with our full heart, Krishna will not really come, at least in those situations. But when the taking shelter is done with utmost sincerity, then Krishna will appear. Krishna will give the reciprocation of our prayers. And this is so nice. This is also what gives us juice, what gives us strength in our spiritual life, what gives us taste in spiritual life. The Shastra gives an example of the bee. When the bee go into a flower, a rose flower, for example, to take the nectar of the flower, often the petals of the flower will be there to protect the bee against wind, against sun, or even against rain to some extent. So in the same way, when the devotees go to take the pollen of the lotus feet of the Lord, he will immediately just get protected by the Lord's shelter. When one takes shelter, we become free from fear, free from anxiety. We get this higher connection in these sincere moments. So where do we take shelter? In Krishna. Where specifically in Krishna? We know about the holy name, Nam Ashraya, taking shelter in our practice of chanting the holy name. We know that Krishna comes as the holy name, and that's the most accessible form for the devotee. So in those moments, the way, the easiest or the surest way of taking shelter is taking shelter into the holy name, Nam Ashraya. Or, like Srila Prabhupada mentioned beautifully in that purport, to take shelter to our Krishna. It is beautiful how Prabhupada explained in that purport that we all have a specific attraction or specific relationship with a specific deity. Some might be Lakshmi Narayan, or Sitaram. But like Hanuman was saying, I like Lakshmi Narayan, but in my heart is Sitaram. So in the same way, as we are progressing in spiritual life, we will get some affinity, I think we say, or some type of attraction, maybe for a certain type of deity. Maybe also a certain type of deity come to us, and we feel it's Krishna's arrangement. It's not that I just bought it in the shop, or just because I saw a movie about Lord Ramachandra and I found it was very nice, so now I like Ramachandra more, or like this. But sometimes, as we advance, one may get a deeper relationship with the deities that he receives or the deity that he's worshipping. And there, I think the devotee should go deeper and deeper into that relationship. I remember once a devotee asked me, because I'm worshipping the deities of Satchinandana Swami, Shri Radha Kanhaiya Lal, one devotee asked me once, so how is your relationship with your deities? And I was a little like, my relationship with my deities? I mean, I know relationship with Krishna, but I'm serving them every day, but I felt my relationship, although I'm serving them every day, my relationship with them is very poor. I'm not speaking to them. I'm not opening my heart to them. I'm not exchanging to them. Something is missing. I'm worshipping them, but the connection or the relationship is not strong enough. And I think this point that Prabhupada make here, it's a very beautiful point that if we are worshipping deities or certain form of the Lord, so that we go really deep into that relationship, and in moment of taking shelter, we also take shelter to that form of the Lord, that form of the Lord that is close to our heart, that form of the Lord where we develop this intimacy, this closeness to the form of the Lord. So, I'm done with my notes. I would like to tell you a last story because we still have a little time. That we know how the Brajvasis were so expert in taking shelter of Krishna. Although Krishna was just such a small boy, whenever there were dangers, they would go to Krishna to ask for shelter. So at the end of the Kaliya Lila, when Krishna came out of the water, the Brajbasis were so relieved. Krishna was really making the Brajbasis in very high emotional states. Because just before he came out of the water, as the fight was going on with Kaliya, the Brajbasis were just dying out of fear of what was happening. And Krishna was just staying there in the coils of Kaliya. Kavikarnapur mentioned that there was two reasons why Krishna stayed so long in the coils of Kaliya. He explained that the first reason, he wanted to see the love of the Brajbasis. He wanted, although the Brajbasis were in anxiety, but that was a sign of their love for him. So he wanted to see all of that. And the second reason was that Krishna wanted to wait that everyone will be here and before he will start to dance on the woods of Kaliya. So therefore it's still long so that everyone could come. Anyway, the devotees were going through so much anxieties about Krishna's safety. And then Krishna danced. So from one moment to the other, they were coming to this intense anxiety, to this intense relish of seeing Krishna dancing on the hoods of Kaliya. So when Krishna came out of the water, the Brajbasis were just overwhelmed with love, and all the cowboy came to embrace him. The cows came close to Krishna also and will just stare at Krishna, and tears will come down, and then they will smell the aroma of Krishna's body, and they will just become intoxicated, and they will start to lick Krishna, almost like wanting to swallow him. And then it was late. It was late, and Nanda Maharaj said, it's too late to go back to Braj. Let us make camping. Let us stay here in the forest and sleep overnight in the forest of Braj. Wow, everyone was very enthusiastic. Yeah, Jai Ho, that's a good idea. So they made some different cycles of protection to guard the Braj passes. In the middle were the ladies and children. Then around them were the gopas. Then around them were some kshatriya gopas. I mean, they were skilled into fighting ways. Then there were the cows, and then there was still a fifth round of another round of those warriors or those skillful soldiers. And then the night came, but nobody could sleep. After such a display of amazing attributes of Krishna dancing on the hoods of Kaliya, nobody could sleep. They were all speaking about Krishna, how he danced. You remember when he did like this and like that? How beautiful was Krishna when he came out wet from the water, and his clothes, wet clothes, were all molding his body. How beautiful was Krishna at that time? But finally, in the middle of the night, most of the Brajbasi fell asleep. Just the gopis were the last one sleeping. And now that everyone else was sleeping, they could look at him without any shame. But suddenly, a terrible sound came. A loud sound. And the alarm was given by the soldiers. And everyone woke up. And what is happening? What is happening? They all started to call Krishna, Krishna, some danger. And then they started to speculate. Is it Kaliya coming back to take revenge? Is it some herd of elephants, mad elephants, running toward us? What is happening? But then they saw the light, the red light coming all around us. That was a forest fire, a raging forest fire. And they all called Nanda Maharaj first. Nanda Maharaj remembered the words of Garga Muni, and he immediately understood Krishna. Krishna is our only chance. Then the cracking sound of the fire was becoming more and more intense. The light and the heat was coming closer and closer. The flame of the fire was licking the sky. All the animals were running away, and everyone was just frightened, and was just, they were all taking shelter at Krishna. And then Krishna said, don't worry, just close your eyes. Can you imagine? That's just amazing. In such intense situation, you ask someone to help you and the person says, just close your eyes. But the Brajvasis had faith in Krishna. They knew he can do everything. So they closed their eyes, and Krishna just followed the entire fire. And then with his glance, he restored all the trees, everything that had been burned, into their original states. And then the Brajbasis opened their eyes. They just could not believe. What happened? Was it a magician's trick? Was it a dream? What happened? But then they understood, in any case, everything is the grace of our Lord. Everything is the grace of our Krishna. And then, full of love, they exchange with Krishna and spend more time with Krishna. Okay, so I don't know if you have any questions on that topic. I think it's quite practical application of Krishna consciousness. It's not only theoretical concept. It's something we can do at every moment of our life, or we are supposed to do, or we are inspired to do this taking shelter, this turning of our heart toward the Lord with utmost sincerity. So if you have any questions.
Try to control the situation. But my experience of taking shadows, since we have different forms, what we worship or taking shadow to, sometimes I'm getting bewildered because there's the Singha Dev. I mean, there's so many forms that, okay, now I have this, I have to, you know, in the evening sometimes I have a whole list to whom I approach for this and for that, and then I think, maybe is it not good always to just say, give me, protect me, this and that, and maybe I should just do service. You know, because I always come and say, this, that, this, that. And there are also so many. You know, we go for Nityananda, you ask this, and then you go to Nanda Singhadev, and you ask this, and Radha Krishna, give me love, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And is it not more practical to just concentrate on one deity? And is it even good to just ask things, or maybe just do service?
I think in our stage, it's very good to ask. It's becoming Krishna conscious. It's remembering the Lord when we take shelter at the Lord, or when we ask something for the Lord. If we do it that with our heart, we are connecting. We could say it's Vandanam. It's a limb of devotional service. So it's in our stage it's okay. In really high stage of Krishna consciousness, one can come to that mood where he's just serving and he's not asking anything else. Of course, I think we should be careful to not ask for material things, to not ask for broken glass, but to ask for help in our devotional life. I think this is very recommended, especially in our stage of Krishna consciousness, when we are still some anattas are there, some we just cannot do it alone. It's necessary. So I think in our stage it's very, very important. Some years ago, Chandramouli Maharaj was in Zagreb, just came and we welcomed him with kirtan, and then he went into the temple room and gave a little speech about, he was saying that all our sufferings come from our expectations. Because we expect this or that, then we need to suffer, because the expectations are not fulfilled. And then I ask a question, what's about our expectation for spiritual progress? Is that all right to expect that, or even to demand or to request the Lord to help us make progress? And then he said, yeah, it's all right, but that's the beginning stage. When you are more advanced, you just want to serve. So the higher stage, you just want to serve, and that's fine. But I think in our stage, it's very important. It will help us to be Krishna conscious. It will help us to remember the Lord, to turn toward the Lord. Such an important switch in our hearts when we tend to do our spiritual practice in a mechanical way without this turning of the heart toward the Lord. So this begging for shelter, this asking for help to serve Him better, to do the service better, I think it's very, very good to do that. Now concerning asking many things to many deities, it might tend to become mechanical also, that we do that every day at a certain time, and that we just do it, but our heart is not fully switched on. We are doing it, but our mind might be somewhere else. But I think it's still good to do. I think also in the beginning we might ask so many different deities, but ultimately we want to come to a type of focus into our worship, into our Ishtadev, or the personality we worship. That doesn't mean that we will neglect the other personalities. For example, on Nityananda's appearance day, we will get to look for special mercy for Nityananda. For example, you are in Vrindavan and you go, there is the temple of Purnamasi, or then you will go there and then you will pray to her according to circumstance, or maybe you have a specific problem that you know this deity is specially able to take care of that, so you might turn to that deity in that moment. But this doing every day, asking many different deities, it's good to some extent, but one need to be careful to not do it in a mechanical way. Really, when we turn toward the Lord, it's good to try to do it with full heart. But ultimately, our focus will be into one deity, and this deity is the main deity, is the Ishvara, is the person who give power to all other deities to grant blessings or to help in the way we are requesting. So this turning to this our deity, of course Krishna deity, then their all blessings and all support and everything we need will be actually given by that deity. So ultimately we will come to that point. I would answer.
It seems in Krishna consciousness that it's all about Krishna. It's also the form of Krishna. And sometimes when devotees have attraction to like different deities, like Ram and Simhadev, and they say that's my deities. Sometimes it's even I have the feeling it's kind of controversial. Like people don't like to hear that. And even in every Prabhupada, he gives a lot of focus of course, always says he's the Krishna's the supreme personality, so should always go to the supreme. So, how to, I don't know what's the. So, the Vaishnava was really the promise.
I think it's really in very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness that one really. Get it through. I mean, that's really understand this is my Ishtadev. This is the form I need to worship. Before we are, after Anatta Nivritti, as long as we are quite impure and quite border with those Anatta, I think we cannot get a clear vision of who is really our Ishtadev. We might feel attracted maybe from to Lord Jagannath, or maybe to Hare Krishna, or maybe to Lord Chaitanya, but it's not, it can be quite speculated. It can be, but still I think it's alright to wherever we feel some type of attraction, even if it's not pure, but to keep on doing and serving that deities. But one should maybe not make a big show out of it and tell, oh, this is my Ishtadev, or this is my Lord. This is actually a very private things that one actually will not tell everyone or will not... Actually, it is said there are few things one should never tell, like the mantra we are chanting, the name of our Guru, and our Ishtadev. There are things we are not supposed to tell to everyone. Once I asked a devotee, we were taking prasad together, and I say, well, who is your guru? And he said, I don't tell you. He said, my guru is in my heart, and if I tell you his name, he will leave my heart. So I keep him in my heart. Also, when you are in India, so many people come to you, who is your guru? I also never tell. I mean, if you have a senior devotee coming to you and say, who is your guru? It's okay. You are sometimes even supposed to introduce yourself. I'm Gaurahari Das, disciple of... But often it's taken cheaply. Who is your guru? Who is your guru? It's very good to not tell at that time in cheap way. To understand the name of our guru is something very special. Our guru is somebody very special. I don't give it cheaply like this to everyone. So our Ishtadev also is something that we will never make a show or never tell it to others. So maybe sometimes young devotee might have this tendency, they just don't know, and they say, oh, this is my Lord or my deity. Then I think it's fine. You say, please keep on worshipping that deity, it's good. But it's not necessary really to instruct them, you need to be ekanta on that deity or things like this. You just let them time to grow. Even for I think in our levels, we don't know. We might have some signs and some liking to worship some type of deity, but it's still not revealed. So we just keep on focusing the worship, and then we see how it comes. Of course, Prabhupada and especially Gaudiya Vaishnava, we are brought in a natural way to Radha and Krishna. And I guess most of us, we are Radha and Krishna Bhakta. And that's also a reason why we were attracted to that movement. But there might be few exceptions, few Nishinga Bhakta, few Ram Bhakta in our movement who are also there and have another deity they worship. It's difficult to know really if it's mental things or if it's really their true identity or their true identity as a servant or that deity. But in any case, we respect everyone. And I think, for example, I don't want to quote name, but there are at least one Vaishnava I know, and I know he's a Nishinga Bhakta. He's Lakshmi Nishinga Bhakta. He's just totally into that, and he's just, that's his life. There is no, and you know, okay, that's clear for that person. So I think there are few very special cases that they have another deity, but I think for all of us, it's mainly Lord Chaitanya or Radha and Krishna or Jagannath who is non-different, of course, that our Shyama Sundar Krishna. Yeah. So it comes later. I think we should not be harsh to those young devotees who might be happy to say who is their Lord, and encourage them. And we should be careful to not tell others about those private or intimate matters. Okay, any other questions? So I think we have reached a natural end. So I thank you very much. It was nice to have your kind attention. It was very, very happy I could do this service of giving the lecture this morning. And yeah, let's hope we keep in mind this point of taking shelter, maybe at least today. That could be the motto of our day, whatever we are doing. Also today is Sunday feast. Guests are coming. We can pray to the Lord that is giving us proper words, proper intelligence to encourage everyone in Krishna consciousness, to inspire all those who come here to get inspiration, that we are able to give them what they are coming to look in our one-to-one dealing with others. So let's try maybe to take shelter in so that we can do a good service. Garantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.